You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to chumbacasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of a sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
That UFO podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. The open beta strives to put the power of studio quality remote video production into the hands of anyone with a story to tell. Features include HD video recording, studio quality sound, chat and footnotes. All running right from your browser so you can record from anywhere without ever installing anything. Check out the links in the show description to find out more. Hi everyone and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. It is the listener call-in show for November 2021. Andy here for the minute just to say hello to you and introduce you to this month's call-in. It was a great time recording it. Thanks to everyone who got in touch and it was great to hear so many more new listeners get in touch as well. Dan does join me after a couple of calls. He missed the first few, but the calls were fantastic this month. We talked on a whole range of subjects, including nuclear connection, the need for meetups, and you know, frequency of potential cancers and biological effects. We talked about thunderstorms, time portals, Tic Tacs evading pilots, and a whole lot more as well as that. Our new breakdown show is out just now where we talk about the amendments to the language in the Senate bill. We also share some non-spoilery thoughts on the new Eternals movie because there are some very interesting UFO themes in there too. So please check that one out. Thanks to everyone who has left us recent reviews on Apple and any other podcasting platform. We really do appreciate it. And again, just a reminder, folks, if you want to support the podcast, if you're on Apple, jump onto Apple Podcasts and you can sign up for a 2-week free trial of Apple Premium. That gives you access to the shows early and also advert-free. I take out all the ads that potentially could be in there. And then also you can sign up on Patreon for a whole host of benefits as well as the same ones you get on Apple Premium too, including access to the very popular Discord chat as well. And also, if you want to support the podcast and get a little something back at this time of year, we still have the option of Manscaped and our promo code. So check out manscaped.com and use the promo code @andyufo. That's manscaped.com and promo code andyufo for 20% off and free shipping. It does make a difference to the podcast as well. We of course get a little bit of kickback, which helps us pay some of the bills. And of course, don't forget Zencastr. If you're looking to start up your own podcast, record meetings, all that kind of stuff, Zencastr is offering 40% off with the promo code UFOPodcast. Just check out zencastr.com for that as well. Without further ado, let's get right into the show this month, and we're going to kick off in the United States with Joe in Ohio.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you. Thanks for calling in. Listen, the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the old Marvel Comics What If.
You know what? I'm not old enough to remember the comics. I knew about the series when they announced it a little while back. And if you remember, I done a couple of shows called What If.
Yep.
And then it was then I saw that series was coming out, and Dan was like, "Did you not know about that?" And I was like, "No, I'd never heard of it." But yeah, I'm aware of it now. Yeah.
Well, my first point is my brain works in what ifs, and this whole phenomenon is a big what if. And the nuclear connection, it seems to be a pretty strong connection over the years, and the general thought process seems to be that they're warning us about something or trying to stop it or doing something. But what if they were trying to learn the technology? What if humans somehow stumbled into a way to split the atom and this phenomenon never did? You know, so what if they're studying nuclear, the process to, I don't know that they're warning us at all.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting one. My thoughts on it is that they don't necessarily have this same technology. Maybe we are on the right path to something and we've done it in a very raw way.
Sure.
And they're kind of looking going, okay, you've got the right idea, but you're maybe not quite there yet. And they're keeping an eye on it. For me, you know what was really interesting? I think you look at this and go, because they must be so much more advanced than us, then they have anything we have, but 1,000 times better, or they don't need it anymore. And I even talked recently on one of the pods about, you know, why would these craft need Windows? And I was like, well, you know, mm-hmm. why not? It's very, again, it's that human thing, isn't it? Of, well, they shouldn't need Windows. They should have two-way viewing or whatever they need for that kind of stuff. But again, maybe that just works. So I would think that they're studying, definitely. I think it's more observational when it comes mm-hmm. to the nuclear stuff. I think it is that old analogy of the kids have found the matches.
Right.
That Dan talked about on the recent podcast, you know, the gorilla in the zoo with the key.
Yep.
And it doesn't know it's got the key to do what it's going to do, but the gorilla's playing with the key. And maybe these zookeepers, whatever they are they're watching us play with the key. And they're wondering, is the gorilla going to figure out how to get the key in the lock? And
are they
going to
figure out the next step?
Yeah. Or are they just going to mess about with the key and sit and brush their hair with it and throw it at people and use it in the wrong way?
Sure, sure. It kind of brings me to my second point. You made the comment, and I heard your podcast about the windows in the craft. What I see is a big problem, and we don't know any better because we don't know what we don't know. But we have to assign human assumptions to everything. We assume this is something with eyes that could even see out a window. We assume that there's something in some of these crafts, at least, where they could look out a window. There's always, as in any investigation, there's a who, what, when, where, why. And we know some of the wheres, and we know some of the whens, but we instantly seem to jump to the why. Why are they here? Why are they doing what they're doing? And we don't even know the what yet. As far as we know, these Tic Tacs and the Go Fast could be some kind of an intergalactic insect that's just flying around and not doing anything. You know, we don't know. We can't. That's all we have to go on is our human assumptions and what we know. But we could be so far off.
I think you're right on that, and that's where for me something like the application of artificial intelligence could be massive in this.
Yes,
because I saw someone mention that AI is only as good as the program that writes it, but the best AI can learn and evolve, which is a scary thing in itself. We've all seen Terminator and those kind of movies,
right?
But
right.
The practical applications of it is that something, it can be looking for something that we aren't.
It can find patterns within, you know, I think Tom DeLonge talked about biblical texts and various yes. religious texts going through the millennia, where it could scan through it and just something we're totally missing. Or it could highlight something altogether of, do you know what, here's something it's found and all of this stuff which points to X. And that's it. You take away that kind of human bias, don't you? Because everything is, it's fun speculation. Like you talk about the Windows stuff. Maybe the Windows are for our benefit. Maybe it's like, right. yeah. Like, I mean, the Tic Tac, from what we hear, had no obvious signs of, you know, like a porthole or an exhaust or anything. It was just a smooth correct. Shell. There's yep. various conflicting reports as to whether it had the two little legs underneath. Right. Right. I've seen some artist's impressions where they've got four. I've seen some where it's got the two, one front, one at the back. But then I've heard otherwise that it just had the smooth kind of shell. So again, it's a case of maybe some of these craft that are occupied have windows for our benefit. Maybe they've got windows for a purpose that are just totally not what we would think. Maybe they aren't even, maybe they aren't windows. Maybe it's something else. But to us, it looks like a window, but it yeah. serves some totally other function that's just so incredible that we couldn't even think that, oh, that's what it's for.
Yeah, we could be missing a totally basic law of physics that we don't aren't even aware of that could allow us to do everything they're doing very simply, and we just are completely unaware of it.
That's it. We're stuck with that kind of human problem that we have to go, oh, well, we would do this, so why wouldn't they? It's yeah. And it goes the other way as well, though, like I've mentioned several times about, oh, people argue, but why would these craft crash? Well, why not? Why does it have to be infallible? Just because the technology is seemingly so much further ahead than ours. I mean, right. they're not putting petrol or diesel in these things.
Correct.
What we don't know what could or couldn't go wrong with them.
Yep. If it's something manufactured, there's always a chance of failure.
Exactly. And like you say, maybe some of these things are some sort of biological entity. I think sure. Dan talked about that with me recently as well on the pod. You said some kind of intergalactic insect. Why not?
Sure. And if, why not?
That would explain the behavior, the erraticness. Like I talked about, like a fly, when you're trying yes. to swat a fly, and no matter how many times it gets near you and annoys you, it moves out the way.
Yes.
And that's what these Tic Tacs seem to be able to do. No matter how close right. they get to them, they can shoot off at incredible speeds, and maybe they see things differently. So I'm with you on that one, yeah.
Yeah. And I do have one more point. I want to respect your time here. And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but you're getting a big enough following, and I know you get a lot of praise. But what are some of the criticisms that you get? Do you see a common denominator in some of the criticisms you get?
Honestly,
other than Dan being on mute,
yeah. People are pretty. I mean, I quite enjoy checking some of the YouTube comments as that's taken off, and it's like someone said the other day, it was a pointless podcast, meaningless podcast, okay. And I was like, I just said, thank you, I agree. but you're never going to please everyone. Honestly, for me, it tends to be the accent, which it generally doesn't bother me. Nothing tends to bother me. I think that's where most of the trolls tend to leave it alone, because they'll see myself and Dan will engage with people in the chats, and it's just like, look, we'll talk to you, it's fine. You know, you don't have to like it. Thanks for spending the time listening or watching, but any criticisms tend to be, can't understand the host, but if people stick with it, they tend to be okay after a couple of shows.
Definitely.
I am aware I talk very quickly and everything, and it's just a Scottish thing. It's our accent. But I'm kind of slowing that down for people. So, and I'm doing it purposely now as I talk to you, because I'm aware of it. But when you get, I think it's natural when you get excited about anything, especially this topic, and you get into the flow of conversation, you start to pick up pace, and like sure. we're going back and forward, Joe, and I start to come back on you, you come back on me, and it's just natural that happens in conversation. But yeah, I've been honestly really surprised at the lack of criticism in that sense. Like I'm always open to feedback and all that kind of stuff, but I think the podcast is the way it is. I think it's worked well because there's been a lot of it I haven't planned massively, and stuff has worked well because it's been organic or it's grown, and there's been things I've started that I've dropped after one attempt or one show because it didn't sure. work, or I didn't feel it or whatever. But no, I'm open for any feedback or improvements and stuff like that, but it's trying to keep the podcast the way I think it should be and the way I kind of do it. And it's, I suppose, the really cheesy one would be true to myself, as people would say. But yeah, nah, any criticism from you?
No, not at all. And actually, I think you're an excellent interviewer, and sometimes you're interviewing some pretty big guns, and you do an excellent job at it.
Thanks. Do you know what? I try and make sure I do it differently, because especially in this community, there's a lot of really great channels and different channels. Like, you've got like Project Unity, you've got Unidentified sure. Celebrity Review, Christina Gomez, Somewhere in the Skies, Witness Citizen. So there's all these different shows, and a lot of them have their own styles. And at the same time, we can all end up with the same guest.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I always try and make sure that if people are listening to an interview, so in a couple of weeks, I've got John Ramirez, who's currently doing the rounds a little bit, you know, former CIA. I've got questions, and I'm a bit curious about a few different aspects of the guy himself. But he's done an interview with Sean Rash. He's done one with Project Unity. I like to make sure that when people listen to mine, they've not heard it before.
Correct.
And that's good. With anyone. So, because that's what I would want to hear. And that was one of the reasons I started the podcast. So yeah, it seems to work. And thanks for saying I'm a good interviewer. I'm just nosy and curious. So,
oh, that's where it starts. But good. I won't take up any more of your time.
Joe, it's been awesome speaking with you. Make sure you call in again next time, okay?
Sure will. Thank you very much.
We're going to move over from Joe in Ohio now to James in Hastings. James, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. Good to hear from you. Listen, James, the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about?
So I think gravitating from your recent meetup in London with the established Lou Elizondo, it's sort of emphasizing a thought that I've had recently, the need for real meetups with people. Not necessarily with the celebrities like Lou, but just with the people from, you know, Twitter and anybody else who is interested in the subject. It's just important to meet up in person. I think the problems that we have on Twitter, like, for instance, the trolls, the arguments, and anything else going on, which just takes up time unnecessarily, this just disappears when you're mostly in person. You have the ability to filter very quickly based on face-to-face interaction, and I think that's very important. So I think going forwards in the future, if there's some possibility of doing regular meetups, we'll have to work out how exactly. But I think it's probably of great benefit to the community in the long term to actually meet up with people.
I absolutely agree with you. The audience for the podcast is quite split. Usually it's like more than half is based in the US, and obviously I am not. And we've got a good chunk of the audience then based in the UK. I know definitely in the immediate future for the podcast and for the gents at UAP Media, we're looking to arrange some things for next year where people can come and meet not just us, but meet each other. It was really nice when I was in London last week. Yeah, I got to meet Ryan Sprague and Lou and the guys from the group, but some of the listeners came and met me who are based in London for a coffee while I was waiting on my train as well, and that was really nice. And like you say, it's just meeting people face to face and seeing them and talking through stuff, and it's really good to do that. And I think you're right, it would maybe alleviate a lot of the tensions that sometimes happen, and people build up, not necessarily characters, but it builds up online behind 280 character, you know, texts, and people can lose a lot of context and messages. And I am all for healthy debate. And I've had a few times where people say, I'm really sorry to argue. And I'm like, don't be, it doesn't have to be an argument. You can just debate and go back and forward. And, you know, it's interesting because that's how you can learn and change and form a new opinion. Or you can just agree to disagree and go, do you know what? You think this, I think this, then brilliant. But I think with things getting more back to normal, I think there'll be a lot more meetups next year. I know there's a few events already planned for the UK. It would be great, personally, if I could get something on myself. I would like to do that. But we'll see. That's early days for all that stuff. But there's a few things I'll be looking to get along to next year that other people are putting on, even if we don't get to do something ourselves. And it'd be, again, great to meet people face-to-face, yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Second point, I noticed recently, or it occurred to me, that the frequency of cancers among people who have been in very close contact with something UFO related seems to be a little bit too high. And this is dangerous because sort of thinking about just taking up, you know, things that you've picked up from Twitter or elsewhere is not necessarily real information. Mm-hmm. But off the top of my head, there was Chase, who you interviewed, who was a MUFON investigator. One of the encounters in the Skinwalkers book recently, they were describing the person who had cancer as well as a result of the blue orbs encounter. And yeah, if I don't...
biotech engineer, yeah.
Yes, this guy. And if I remember correctly, I think Stephen Greer had a personal friend who also died of some... I don't know how rare the cancer was. Just from a statistical point of view, it would be very interesting if we could get a little bit more data on that. And that's difficult because it's personal medical data. But rare cancers can be extraordinarily rare, in the order of, you know, one in a million or even less frequent than that. It'd be very interesting if there was, in fact, a collection of people who say that they've had encounters which were particularly close and they've had particularly rare forms of cancer. It would be quite easy to do the statistics on that and work out that that was highly unlikely. It would be a very interesting data point if it was possible to gather this data.
Yeah, I think, like you touched on there, with the Skinwalker Ranch incident, not necessarily it was on the ranch, but it was involved in the book. The biotech engineer, like you say, got a rare form of cancer, luckily, was treatable. You've got patient confidentiality, which is always going to affect these things, but I think when you hear them talking about at a governmental level, you know, biological effects being one of the observables now, that's what they're looking at, people getting these illnesses from it. And it got me thinking, James, I was watching last night a documentary that's coming out soon, and one of the talking heads was talking about experiencers and, you know, all these wonderful experiences people have had about going on board craft and meeting beings and orbs and all this stuff, very much on the love and light side of things. But it makes you wonder, are any of these people getting ill as well? Because what we are hearing is that whether it's meant to happen or not, people do get ill from contact or close contact with these objects. So there's a real question there for me of why do some people tend to get ill and some people don't? The obvious one would be, are some of these people who are claiming to have these experiences who aren't getting ill, are they all being completely genuine? Is there a case for when you are having experiences, or not necessarily abductions, but, you know, a positive that someone claims to have been on board a craft and have gone to a different star system? Is it a case of, if it's a subconscious thing, then there's no physical effects, but when it's the physical body, then is that when people start to get ill because our own bodies can't handle whatever it is that maybe makes these craft go, or just traveling through the universe or universes? So there's a lot of questions to go on that, and I suppose you can go down a massive rabbit hole with it. Maybe just different beings, different craft to have different effects on us. But what do you think yourself?
I don't know, but I think it'd be interesting to separate them, because potentially the intent of the phenomenon could be related to whether you are in danger or not. If they're doing the mental based sort of extraction of your consciousness and taking you off somewhere else and doing that, presumably you're not at risk of getting cancer or something like that. The other encounters where you're actually interacting very closely, is that a different type of person who is doing that? Using the term loosely, maybe the intent is different. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Sure. And you had one more point regarding a book. Is that correct, James?
So I think I've thought this for a little while now. I think that it's kind of the time where we need to get a good coffee book out there somehow. Something with potentially lots of images and glossy text, but something that might be a little bit more applicable to the general person sitting in a coffee store or you know, your local book publisher. Something that you can flip through, something which gives you a good high-level overview, something which doesn't go too deep, and something which focuses on the main facts that we can generally verify fairly obviously and easily. So things which are sort of more generally accepted than necessarily going down too much of the woo subject. But it sort of feels like we need this sort of book. If there's somebody out there who is in the right position to do this sort of thing, I'm offering my time to help put that together in some way, and, you know, publish that. I know Graham, for instance, he's put together the wonderful Foo Fighters book, and it's amazing. but it's very, very deep. It's very detailed. And the time investment is very high. And I think generally in this subject, if you want to get into it, the time investment is still really high. And to kind of get this applicable to a wider audience, it needs to have a kind of, you're looking for kind of the 20-minute deep dive into the subject without going too deep. So I'm just putting it out there, and maybe we can start something. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting one. That's something I will never claim to be a writer or anything like that, but I've had an idea not too dissimilar to what you're talking about, that I reckon I could put together, and it wouldn't be anything like the books that we see released by, you know, Graham or Ryan Sprague or these types of authors, but something aimed at people getting into the subject, easy to pick up and put down. You see that kind of coffee book type, coffee table type book where they can flick through it having a coffee. You know, even you get those books that people keep in their toilet that they can sit and guests can have a flick through as well. That's not massively detailed, but it's a nice introduction to the subject and something they can pick through. So, but yeah, it's an interesting idea. If someone else gets that out, then I'm sure there's room for plenty of them. But I've had a couple of ideas myself on that, James, so it's interesting you bring that one up.
It's actually it's the best Christmas stocking filler, possibly.
Yeah. But listen, James, great speaking with you. And make sure you call in again next time, okay, mate?
Thank you very much.
Thanks to James and Hastings. We're heading back over to the United States, and we have Carl joining us. Carl, how are we doing today?
I'm well, Andy. Thank you. How are you?
I am very well. Almost like we're doing this for the second time after a slight technical issue, isn't it? You know me, I'm always one to be honest. But listen, Carl, I had my eyebrows raised on your submission for the call-in because you mentioned you want to talk about thunderstorms, time portals, and creating warp bubbles in a lab. That's some interesting stuff to be talking about. So the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about on that first?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. I love the show. Thanks for having me back on. So time dilation, warp bubbles, and thunderstorms. So a couple weeks ago, I was on the APEC conference, the Advanced Propulsion Engineering Conference, and a gentleman named David Perez came on and talked about his research and experiments with warp bubbles and a device that is seemingly moving through space just using electricity. So his research started out with some observations about thunderstorms, specifically when two thunderstorms collide, and some historical accounts of pilots experiencing time dilation when they fly through basically a tunnel that forms when these thunderstorms collide. And what David realized was that these thunderstorms are producing antimatter, which he seemingly has evidence for through NASA. And he took that research, kind of tracking, I should say, it's really interesting. He actually correlated these events with solar wind and high-speed solar winds. And so it was just even fascinating to think about the idea that thunderstorms are tapping into solar winds and maybe that's where all of this power magnitude that is necessary is coming from. And so he took this idea and back to the lab and created a device that replicated the fields of the thunderstorms and has produced experimentally a warp bubble that will compress space in front of the device and pull the device forward.
That's a little bit, you sound much more scientifically astute than myself, but when Bob Lazar talked about how the crafts move, that it's the space in front of them is pushed down. He used a bowling ball analogy of putting your fist in front of a bowling ball and the object would fall into the space, but keep falling into the space because the space is continually being moved in front of it. And it's interesting. I know you said it was a very, very small amount the object moved, but I've seen videos recently as well where they're using like sound waves to suspend water droplets in the air. And you see the water droplets being placed on top of each other and they hover. And do you suppose we're at the very early stages or the infancy of tapping into this sort of technology that these craft may be using? Is that what you're thinking?
So yeah, is this man-made? I think there's a definite possibility that it could be. You know, I think that if these are if the laws of physics that Tic Tacs are using is accessible in our universe, then eventually it will be man-made. And if people have been thinking about these ideas and these laws of physics for more than 10 years, then yeah, I think there's a really good chance that somebody probably has cracked this. So we're probably playing catch up.
How do we get to that point, though, do you think? Because if you've got someone like David who's managing to create these at that very base level, surely you've then got, and forget the conspiracy side of it, that the government's got this technology. Why doesn't someone like Elon Musk, who clearly doesn't care about governments and all that kind of stuff, who is sending these rockets up into space still with a level of fuel and all at great expense, why doesn't he, do you think, look into this sort of, you know, propulsion?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he is and he's not talking about it. I think that's certainly reasonable. But I think that the realm of what they have is functional in terms of rocketry far exceeds where we're at right now. So if they need something to utilize, they have rockets that are they're making advances on and perfecting. And I actually think that no matter the scenario, I think for long distance travel, you're probably going to need rockets for dealing with, fine-tuned things. Even if gravity propulsion is possible, you're probably going to need a combination of both technologies.
Yeah, no, really good shout. Some really good points as well, Carl. Thanks for persisting with the tech issues. Good speaking with you, and I'll speak to you again next time, okay, man?
Be well, sir.
We are carrying on with the call-in show. Dan has joined me now for the call-in. Dan, welcome to the podcast, eventually.
You almost caught me on mute then, but I moved my mouse quick. It's nice to be here.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Oh, almost on mute. Well done. Dan was seeing the Eternals this afternoon. We'll have that conversation another time, because joining us on the line is Phil from Malibu, California. Phil, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's very good to have you. You may hear, and I'm talking to you, Phil, and the listeners listening to this now, some popping in the background. As we record this, we are right slap bang in the middle of fireworks night in the UK. So myself and Dan have decided to record at a time when the whole of the UK are letting off loud explosions in the air. So apologies if you hear that in the background. But Phil, listen, the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys, because you have a great show. I'm one of those people that never believed in UFOs. I thought anybody was abducted was probably on drugs of some sort. And, just never really did the research. Had never even heard of a cattle mutilation until a few months ago. And my brother, dad, they hadn't heard of it, you know, and you start asking about this. And so I appreciate what you guys are doing. You guys bring a very common sense, logical take to the table. So I appreciate it.
No, thank you.
The question I want, one of the things that I think is so intriguing are the facts. And I like that you guys stay on the facts of, and I like to know what's hoax and what isn't, but I think what was so intriguing about the Nimitz episode, and you hear about the Tic Tac and the shape and things like that. The question I have 10 questions, but I'll start with one, is that the point that Kevin Day was so amazed by, and it's what David Fravor said made his hair stand on end, was the fact that after he did his downward spiral and kind of engaged the tic-tac, that it bolted and went due west. And it's kind of off the coast of where I live. And I know where it went. The reports are it went 2 to 5 seconds. It traveled 60 miles. Okay. But more importantly, so if you do the math, it's 100 to 200,000 miles an hour. So I want to know if those facts are right. The other thing was the crazy part is that it went to a predetermined area that only a handful of people in the top parts of the military on the top, you know, the leaders of the ship knew about. So the question was the information in his brain or was it pre-programmed into the plane? Because common sense tells you it read either his brain or he knew where it go, or it read the computer program that was pre-programmed in the plane. And that is, do you know offhand if it was a pre-programmed destination or if it was just in his mindset where he knew he was going next?
Yeah, so I believe, and it's something that's brought up quite often, Phil, and is a big talking point in this whole event. The cap point had been used for a few days at least before this happened. So from my point of view, I would suspect that it was a learned behavior and the objects knew they were going there. I don't think, could be wrong, that it was necessarily reading the pilot's mind or even the computer, because it would have seen or noticed, because these objects, remember, were seen for what, 7 to 14 days, hovering just in the distance from the Nimitz and the Princeton. So they were potentially watching and observing, and they would have, I think, learned that's a point they were going to. And for me, it was a learned behavior. So I don't think, and I've said this, there was anything inside the Tic Tacs. I reckon they're a technology that's some kind of AI or drone. And just through observations, they were mimicking, which is why it copied Fravor with a spiral. Or right. It basically was showing them, I can do what you can do. I've been where you've been. And that was the point it was potentially making, is maybe it was a method of communication. I don't know if Dan wants to come in on that.
Yeah, I was going to say this is absolutely something that you and I talk about often, isn't it? Because we have the discussion, observed behavior, or, you know, is it something more? Lou Elizondo often talks about, you know, to use a Doctor Who phrase, timey-wimey stuff, that being inside that kind of bubble of space-time would mean that relative to you, the world moves by differently outside of that. If I was making that technology, you know, I'd use that to project forward and backward and kind of see a long exposure of what was going on around me. So that, you know, the Tic Tac could have in a way seen where Fravor was going using a method like that. So it's either, you know, something observed and learned, like Andy said, or it's something absolutely incredible because it's consciousness-based then, right?
Well, there's two other episodes that one is kind of less known and one is more known, where these objects, whatever they are, or intelligence, are able to read our top computer programs. And the first one is the nuclear silos. So, you know, if you heard the story from one person, you would question it, rightly so. You take it with a grain of salt and say, is this true? But when you hear that happened in the U.S. at multiple sites, and you hear it happened in Great Britain, you know, and then maybe overseas in other areas, other countries, then you start saying it was able to decipher. Probably you've got to assume that our nuclear codes are written in the most detailed, hard to crack code there is, right? So it's able to check that out, enter that code, and figure out how to decode it or how to shut it down. There was a smaller incident that I don't know if a lot of people saw, but on the Skinwalker Ranch episodes, there's one where they see a cattle that died, and they go out to look at it, And the security guard twice in two episodes, he holds out his iPhone, which was locked. Now, the CIA and FBI have not been able to uncrack an iPhone. Yet his was locked. And in two separate episodes, it was opened and you could see it skipping through all sorts of computer programs. So, you know, something else was controlling it. And so in my eyes, I'm looking at, again, you see one episode, you question it, but you say, you look at how this was able to open an iPhone twice on camera, able to access nuclear codes remotely. And the third, and again, you said it could be a learned behavior, but you can't, any naval aircraft is going to have, again, top-notch, you know, security, so you can't crack their codes. And it leads me to believe this thing's reading and able to read our top code. And you would kind of think that would make sense, but it's remarkable.
We're kind of in the realm of quantum computing here, right? Like, what is crazy advanced to us seems super easy to them. And if we can, you know, make a quantum computer that is usable for everyday tasks, then it's going to be able to compute all these different possibilities a lot faster than any other computer, you know? Like you say, those ships would have been using the highest encryption possible. But once we get quantum computing, that encryption is child's play to it. So there's definitely something like that going on. It's interesting you bring up the ghost touch thing, because I used to work for Apple and I've seen so many broken iPhones and so many different permutations of them that I feel like I have a really informed take on the ghost touch stuff. Ghost touch is something that we see, but it doesn't look anything like that when it happens normally. It's the occasional touch randomly on the screen. People will be using their devices and maybe it'll hit a different letter or something like that, especially when it's a cracked screen. And Caleb's screen was cracked, but with this, the phone, you know, you can get electromagnetic interference. The chances of getting electromagnetic interference that hit, you know, four or more points in the correct order to guess his password and get into the phone, that's mind-blowing to me. And you're absolutely right to pick up on that, because yeah, it's not just random interference at that point. There's an actual, you know, direction to get into the phone.
So if you don't mind, I've the last question is, it's regarding the crop circles, which again, never was a believer. You start seeing one or two, and I understand you can't conflate, you know, somebody that's doing it as a hoax with what actually is happening. And you look at the geometric patterns. There is a video, I was wondering if there's any truth to it. I think the guy's name was John Whaley. It might have been 1996, where it's on video. It was said it was a hoax, and then it said it wasn't. But if that's actually, you would think people would, I mean, some of these are just too remarkable to think it's not coming from, it's not man-made. It can't be. The patterns are remarkable. Is there any truth to the Whaley incident, if you know about it, where it was caught on video? Is that a hoax? And some of the coding that you've seen, there's been a couple patterns where they said, hey, there's a sign, there's, you know, here's a pattern of an alien or whatever. Do we think these are real? Do we think they're signs or messages? And I'll let you tell me what you know, because I'm just learning about it and it seems remarkable.
So I would say that there are a lot of hoaxes in terms of crop circles. You know, people make them. They're done as marketing kind of things. But when you look into it, you find out that they're very different to the ones that people find in fields randomly overnight. You know, like the stalks are bent differently in a way that we can't really do. To do it in that way, it takes us a lot longer than one night. And this is one of the things I love about crop circles, no matter if they're made by hoaxes, man-made, or if they're supposedly naturally formed, they always have weird magnetic effects in them. So it's interesting, right? Because it's almost like something showed us a few of them, and now people are mimicking them and finding out that they can generate these weird effects on batteries and electronics within them by using these shapes. So there seems to be a little, almost a nudge to kind of show us something.
I think, Phil, my big interest in crop circles is Dan's totally right. There's a lot of them that are extremely complex that have still been shown to be hoaxes, and they're made generally quite simply, but they still look incredible. But it's the ones where the stalks are bent at such an extreme angle, and the inside of the stalk, the joints and the seeds, if they're called seeds, are burst with like microwave energy, and the stalk itself is like untouched, and it would take thousands of hours for someone to even attempt to do that, and you couldn't do it with the precision that it's happening. So it's those ones for me particularly that are pretty incredible. Not the ones that look good, but yeah, they're probably made by a couple of guys and out with the torch on the helmet and the paddle boards. But there's some points of reference for the really truly anomalous ones, like that kind of surgical precision, that for me makes them definitely worthy of study. And I think it's at an area that's probably one of the oldest ones in ufology that it's poo-pooed and seen as it's a bit crazy. And yeah, crop circles, why is something that's still fascinating, but it's probably one that's understudied, if anything, for me.
Well, I agree with you, because once you look into it, again, it's the same thing with the decoding. You see it happen once, take it with a grain of salt. You say nuclear silos turned off, you say, okay. But when it happens in more than one place, and it happens numerous times, things that are not logically possible to do, you start buying into it. So the final question, I'm going to let you guys take it. Again, 2 years ago, I just thought this was crazy talk. Never heard of a cattle mutilation. Now you look at it and you say, it's not possible to drain the blood. It's not possible. I think Russ Coulthart said there was 50,000 reported to the FBI. So you look at these things, and I look at the three. So my question to you is, I'm kind of a normal guy, family guy, three kids, you know, run a hedge fund. I mean, I'm a boring kind of person. And I've never been in this. And now guys like me are kind of getting roped in, because you're doing the research. You guys are leading it. And I got to tell you, your show is excellent. But you're doing the research. You're reaching out to people like us that were never involved in the first place. The question is, why do you think it's not on the front page of the New York Times? Why isn't somebody going out and saying, guys, this is real. This is the biggest story in the world. I do hear some people say that, but it really is. If this is true, which I'm sorry, I went down the rabbit hole and now I'm lost. You know, I'm going down all these paths. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is real. And it's not fabricated. Why isn't this front page news?
So my opinion, Phil, on that would be, obviously in 2017, it was in December 2017, front page news on the New York Times. That was just the admission of the ATIP program. The US government ran a UFO program and it had an interest in UFOs. The issue going forward has been that the conversation to go forward, you then have to start printing a little bit more speculation, potentially, where you do have to start mentioning ET, or alien, or right, flying saucers, and the public just still have a huge stigma to that sort of language. So that we've had that initial article from Leslie Kane, Helen Cooper, and Ralph Blumenthal. That was all about ATIP, the US government. It was all, like you said, science-based, data-based, fact-based. And going forward, we've had the 60 Minutes piece, and we've had these kind of big documentaries. It's the moving forward, the next steps of the conversation, where Lou Elizondo has started talking now about biological effects, and, you know, consciousness starts to come into it. That's the kind of stuff that when you put that in front of a news editor at a serious publication, they don't want to know, because they don't think it's going to sell newspapers or get the clicks they want. It's just a conversation I don't think the general public are necessarily ready for. What I think is helping is, I mean, never mind this podcast or any other channel out there just now, but when you get someone like Chris Mellon or Lou Elizondo on Joe Rogan, it's not a UFO podcast, but it gets 2 or 3 million downloads an episode. That gets out to a huge portion of the public. Same with Sam Harris, 2 million YouTube followers talking about UFOs. It gets out to that portion of the public. And like you say, normal, everyday working people like yourself and ourselves start to get more involved in the conversation, because they hear people talking about it. that don't normally. And I think that for me is something myself and Dan have spoke about ad nauseum off the air, is that's the next step for this conversation, is getting those people involved. And we've said the name so many times, but if someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson would start sitting on serious news shows and debating, do you know what, let's take a look at this again, I think for me that starts to bring in hundreds of thousands of more eyes. And that's when you start to get the more serious news broadcasts picking this up more and getting it on the front page of those big newspapers as well.
I don't see how anybody that's a logical, I was a math major, so logic based, right? Engineers, it breaks the common sense of what these things are doing. So I think that's the purpose. That's the problem, because your brain doesn't grasp it. But if you do the homework and you look into, and you push aside some of the strangeness of the people that, you know, are a little bit nuts, and you go down to the rational common sense people, the facts don't really lie. And they repeat, and the strangeness repeats in different forms. And I just, I've taken up more than my time. I appreciate it. You guys are great. Keep it factual. Keep it honest. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, Phil. Really appreciate your time, mate.
You guys are great. Thank you.
And just quickly before you go, I just wanted to say welcome to the field. We're going to be seeing a lot of new faces as this subject grows. And if we all do our job, it no longer belongs to ufology I'm doing in rabbit ears. It's just a normal part of everyday conversation.
Next up, we are staying stateside and we're going to Katie in Los Angeles. Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for calling in. Katie, now, I just told you before we started recording, I think Dan's going to enjoy this. You were looking to talk about the idea of human DNA or genetics getting some sort of boost around 70,000 years ago. And then also something about experiencers and insectoids as well. So listen, the floor is yours. On you go.
Well, I just want to say first, thank you guys for doing what you do. I think it's awesome. And thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that, like a lot of people, I was really fascinated by what Lou said about 70,000 years ago, something changed. And what if we got a genetic boost? And then you guys actually brought it up on your breakdown when you said, oh, what if humans aren't the first species that might have been genetically boosted in the past? What if they tried it on other species? What if it didn't work out? And then I was listening to the experiencers that you had on, which was devastating and fascinating at the same time. And, you know, many of them mention insectoid beings that are telepathic. And I was just thinking, what if they did try a genetic boost on other species? And what if it actually wasn't in our reality or our world, but maybe in like a parallel sort of universe? And insects have been around for way longer than we have. So it's possible they have like a 300 million, they're 300 million years ahead of us in that reality. And I just wanted to know what your take on something like that would be, if that's too crazy or what.
Dan, let me kick off, because I know you're going to bring in the good stuff. So I think, like you say, Katie, you even mentioned like if something had a 300 million years head start. I brought up recently that I noticed in a few different interviews, Lou Elizondo mentioned about what if something was, or we had this conversation, but you were 5 minutes from now, and how that might look. And Jacques Vallée, when he was interviewed by George Knapp a couple of weeks ago, also mentioned, what about another civilization that was 5 minutes ahead? Now, maybe they were just picking a random amount of time, but they've both said 5 minutes. And I've heard that in various other places as well. So, like you mentioned, it's really interesting that what if, parallel to our reality, our universe, our dimension, whatever you want to label it as, something else was evolving or being created or whatever happened, some insectoid race or whatever it might be, and they just had a 5 minutes head start. They're 5 minutes ahead in some way, but maybe they experience time in that different way. Dan refers to it as that long exposure, or just how their time works. 5 minutes here is 10 minutes there. So they potentially get that longer time. So it doesn't even necessarily have to be hundreds of millions of years in advance. It could have just been that something at some point was different and it took them down a route. They've got the technology and the state of consciousness, the evolution that they have now. That's just a thought, not to say that's concrete or anything, but Dan might want to come back on that.
No, you've said it now. That's on the record.
I can edit.
I love the idea. Insectoids get mentioned a lot. They were a big part of the Secret Machine series the TTSA did, referred to as kind of the hive, and you know bumblebees were kind of brought into it. So insects are something that I've got my eye on in kind of that way. And it fascinates me that when you're trying to swat a fly or something like that, it can move out the way of you pretty easily, because it's experienced in time differently to what you're experiencing when you're trying to swat it. So it lends itself well to the idea that something developed and just experiences time differently to us. You know, it sounds crazy when you say it like that, but scientifically, this is what they do. This is how they avoid us. This is how they experience the world. We have the opposite when you look at a plant and you see it reacting to light. You know, it's a biological process still. And just like when we make memories, it's a quantum process. So, you know, it stands to reason that things plug into those processes in all kinds of different ways. We know stuff is weird down at those levels as well. And we'd love to kind of, you know, make the effects that are experienced there. They say micro made macro effects. It just means, you know, something small made something universe-sized. That's it. But if we could manipulate that, it you know, we could do anything. So it makes me think of how insects use frequency to signal each other. You know, there's mimicry in nature, and insects will also kind of beat their legs to create certain sounds. And it was mentioned in a Vallée paper and a Davis paper where they talk about how a particular kind of wasp could make another species think it was something entirely different just by beating its wings differently. So it's kind of like hiding in plain sight. And it made me think, wow, that's super interesting. If something could kind of signal us in that way, you know, it could avoid detection. We'd see it as, it could be something that's not a UFO that we see as a UFO when it kind of beats its wings in that way, for example. I love the idea. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting with sort of almost like the camouflage or whatever. And I was thinking, the 300 million years, and I know it's Lou alluded to the whole time thing in his analogy with the cigarette, I think, about how, you know, it might burn differently. And I was thinking, because Dan, I think you brought it up in the breakdown about size, and these insectoids seem to be large when they appear to people, or at least maybe like our size. So that's why I was thinking maybe it was like somewhere in the evolution that they were bigger. Or like you said, maybe it's just, I don't know, some kind of flip like on the quantum realm or something like that.
I just want to ask Katie a question. Do you think then if we've got like these different realities or universes running alongside, is something still in control of all of that? Or is it a pure random process that different universes have humans evolving, others have insectoids evolving, something else has some kind of light or, you know, being of energy evolving? Do you think something, mm-hmm. is that maybe that zookeeper or simulation type analogy I'm kind of getting at?
Yeah, I guess that's the question, isn't it? Is whether it's being intelligently controlled. I think more and more every day, maybe we're in a simulation just because of how things pan out. And if some beings gave some genetic boost to species, then they are sort of in control in a way. But I mean, I just don't know.
The way I've said, I think, Dan, sorry, just before you come in,
that's okay.
With if you played Sim City or Roller Coaster Tycoon or Sim Hospital, any of those games when you were younger, normally you start off with the best intentions, things go really well, and then you get kind of bored as it gets more complicated and you leave it. Oh, I've hit my mic. But then you go back to it like a few weeks later and check your saved game and the whole city's in chaos. Everything's breaking down. It's going really badly. And I just wonder, are we at that point in any potential simulation where something's let it go too long and they're just coming back now to look at it and going, this hasn't went well.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I was thinking too, if maybe the humans in the future are in charge of the simulation, it seems like things would end up how they are just because of how human beings are.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be more entertaining for them in that way, for sure. I was just going to say about Andy's question about whether it's random or not, that I think that's kind of a misnomer. Because it suggests that nature is random and nature is not random. It bores a vacuum. We have an idea of the conditions that nature moves towards, which is, you know, that we would eat and hunt to try and survive. And other things do too. We're now starting to realize when we study the animal kingdom that actually, or sorry, not just the animal kingdom, but life aside from ourselves, that collaboration is actually kind of built into this process of evolution, and nature favors species that collaborate, which I think is amazing, because for the longest time we've thought of, you know, alphas, and it's not really the case that there's an alpha. It's more that everything tries to get along. So that in itself is a paradigm shift that would lend very well to us coexisting with another species, whether they're here or not, or yet to be contacted. But it makes me think of the process of evolution itself as what people refer to as God. And it intrigues me because it's kind of a creative process. And I wonder if, you know, creativity and imagination isn't the engine of the whole thing we're in.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. And also wondering if these beings, or whoever these people are, mankinds, who are messing with things genetically, what if they could engineer like energy to be intelligent? And that's what ghosts are. I mean, I don't know. It would be kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. You know, we, years ago, I always think of, I forget the name of the effect now, but basically up in the Scottish Islands, people used to say that they saw angels and that you could go out on a kind of foggy day and you'd wander in the hills and you would see your higher self and they would give you advice and so on and so forth. Now we know that because of the way that the sun refracts in the ice crystals, it will make a shadow of you in a direction that you don't think your shadow should be. And it just kind of creates a halo of light around the head of the shadow. So that kind of natural process is, you know, once it was myth and kind of a ghost story, but now we understand it fully. And I think we're going to move that way with the phenomena and everything to do with it, because kind of poltergeist activity and that kind of stuff is wrapped up with all of this other stuff that we have. So I feel like this is a path that leads to us, you know, understanding what a ghost is. And, you know, in 100 years, they'll look back on us and go, they call them what?
Katie, we'll have to wrap it up as Dan discredits Scottish angels. I didn't think we were going to go in that direction. But listen, it's been great talking to you. And I do hope you call in again, okay?
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And final call, in keeping with the international flavour we've had for this part one, we have Eric and Peter. They are based in Sweden, I think both in Stockholm. Would that be correct? Or
yeah, Stockholm area, yeah.
Nice. That's,
my name is actually Eric Thomas. So my friends call me Thomas, but I've started using my initials because it's ET person. Yeah.
I noticed that on the emails, the ET, and then I noticed the initials. So yeah, we'll go with Thomas. Thank you. And we've got Peter, and they are from the Swedish UFO podcast, UFO Beyond Reasonable Doubt, which is translated into English, obviously. Do you want to try pronounce that again for us, for the listeners, what it's in Swedish?
Are you talking to Dan?
No, we'll go with you first.
I mean, if you want people to understand it, I suggest you do it.
It's bottom rimligt tvivel, but yeah. But no one's going to understand that. But it's Beyond Reasonable Doubt, but in Swedish. So that's what we're called.
Very nice. Well, the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about?
I've been kind of, my head is full of Roswell at the moment. We're going to do a several part series on the Roswell incident because it's the granddaddy of UFO cases, I would say. I don't know about you guys. Have you, are you into the Roswell incidents, anything?
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of those I think that you get into, especially when you start off on the subject. Mm-hmm. It's the first one, and if you're not involved in the subject and you're just one of the general public who don't even have a passing interest, you know about Roswell. If someone mentions Roswell, it's, you know, oh, that's where the aliens crashed or the flying saucer crashed. Or so, yeah, mm-hmm. it's one of those that it's been a long time. I've said personally, I like a lot of the newer cases because I suppose we have more data, more hard evidence, there's more witnesses that are still alive, which is always a benefit. Roswell is one of those that as the years pass by it becomes more and more myth, but it's something always still seems to come up from Roswell, and even after all these years
there's a lot of human aspects, a lot of human stories to Roswell as well, because it's so many people and so much research done, so it's kind of these threads of human stories, and that's really interesting too. But of course the Nimitz incident is kind of that's a lot of available evidence in that case, of course, and modern technology and stuff. But Roswell is, I think it's still nothing like the Roswell case in my mind. Did you hear about what Lou Elizondo was asked on his personal opinion on the Roswell incident?
Yeah, was this the 100%? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
100% on what, though? Is that 100% that something happened in Roswell? Because I think everyone can agree on that.
Yeah.
I suppose he's not going to go into detail on it. 100% alien bodies and crash.
People can kind of take their own story from it. You know, like if you're listening to that from, like Andy says, it could be 100% that something happened. It could be 100% that there was an ET crash. It could be 100% that, you know, the other story put forward was that it was children suffering I forget the name of the disease now, but basically it made them look very alien to the people that would have approached the balloon they were said to be riding on, which is a crazy story anyway, but you know that's
yeah, you send kids on a balloon,
yeah, but I guess you guys, you follow Lou Elizondo's interviews as closely as we do, so I mean, you know what he means when he says 100%. He isn't talking about something crashed, right?
Yeah, for me, if I had to dig into it, I think Lou's getting at something crashed that wasn't human, at least that much. I think it's one of those, the details behind that of number of bodies is always rumored to be what, 3? 2 died at the crash site, 1 was alive, and then the various rumors split off again of one continued to live or died shortly thereafter. Then there's always rumors of a second crash.
Andy, you're being offensive. Use their names. She was called Elle.
It'll just sound Swedish. But yeah, and that's it. There's just various aspects of the story that branches off to, well, this is what some believe, this is what others believe. But you would think someone in Lou's position would have at least heard enough to know that we recovered something and it wasn't human, and that was the birth of modern ufology, I suppose.
Oh yeah,
didn't Eric Davis also confirm it some kind of somewhere?
Yeah, he's alluded to it, and I think around the same time that was when Tim McMillan shared that little tidbit that he'd kind of heard, and he went to lengths to kind of emphasize it was something he'd heard. He hadn't seen any proof of it, but the story was that the recovered material was something, you know, a lot stranger than any of us think it is. Which was interesting, because what is more strange than, you know, we all talk everything from angels to interdimensional creatures to, you know, just plain old life from another planet that crashed, that, you know, so much variation what we talk about that's the boring option. So to think, okay, well, what's stranger than all of that? It's very intriguing.
Super intriguing.
I know stranger would be I would be really, really surprised if it was a balloon. That would surprise me.
But it wouldn't class as stranger, right?
No. But it would surprise me more, I'd say.
I'm right also, Thomas, you wanted to mention the Welsh Pentuck story. Is that right?
Yeah. I've been checking around a bit about that incident, but what's your guys' opinion on the credibility of the
zero?
Okay,
is that zero better, huh? credibility? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those cases where there's a lot of paperwork surrounding it that suggests it's the more prosaic thing. But I find that when people start digging into it, the story is so, you know, Kaz experienced something that she didn't understand. And I'm sure I would have the same reaction if I was caught in the middle of a British military exercise, you know. But because of the way she presents that story, you know, it absolutely did happen to her. So the story of, you know, there were these big lights and I didn't know what they were and, you know, all the details of that. It's when she tells it, it comes across as genuine because she did have that experience. But like I say, when you actually go looking, you can find the notice that the event was going to be taking place. And Graham Rendell, I'd suggest it's at Borders 570 or 470.
750.
Oh, Borders 750. There you go. Yeah, that's right. I'd recommend give him a ping on Twitter because he's kind of the paperwork guy in our UAP media group. Vinny is hot on his heels and Dave too. But he will extensively give a rounded explanation as to why it's something prosaic.
Okay.
There's a lot to it as well. And again, it's not to try and discredit or poo-poo someone's experience, but I think Kaz's story sounds very well rehearsed at this point. And also the fact that she had claimed to have had no interest in UFOs before the event, yet some people checked out her own private Facebook page, which before the event happened, she was a member of various pages alluding to UFOs as well. So there's just plenty in it that doesn't add up to it being anything
incongruency.
Yeah, I've heard rumors about such information, but
it's a good thing to bring up because at no point here, you know, even though Kaz has told the story a bunch of times, she did have that experience and she's not lying from her point of view. You know, I always find when people have these conversations, if you say, oh, I believe it's something prosaic, they'll say, oh, you saying that she's lying straight away? And you don't have to be calling them a liar.
No,
to say
of course
not. Prosaic.
No.
You know, I'm sure you guys understand, but yeah, I just thought I'd make the point because I see a lot of people in the community do it. It's either you're telling the truth or you're a liar. It's like, no, there's a gray area in between.
Of course, yeah. When it comes to witnesses, you have to divide them. A model from the from my work is if you divide the witnesses, if you look at them and judge them in two characteristics, right? That one is credibility, how honest they are, right? This is the easy, fast explanation. And the other part is how trustworthy their info is. So how good are their eyesight, hearing? Is it supported by other information? What are their education experience and so on and so on? So if you measure those, that's why the Nimitz incident really sticks out, because the credibility and the amount of trust you can put in their testimonies, both were really, really high. So,
yeah, and they can call on a lot of different data and systems that, we don't necessarily get those. We've got the video, but you've got highly qualified military personnel telling you what data they had and what they saw. So either they're all lying about that, or they're being honest for the most part, and they're recalling what they remember happened on those days. And that's just where the Pentuck, the Welsh case for me, just doesn't hold up any water at all. But I would always encourage people to go and do their own research into it, like you gents are doing.
Yeah, I kind of let that case go since I heard the rumors about some strange information. But what about the photos of the trees, that have been broken down and such? Is that not from the incident, or is it?
The trees were from, if you look on the map, I don't actually live too far from where it happened.
Yeah.
And if you look on the map, the forest where those photos were taken, where the Forestry Commission came down and started cutting down trees, that forest was in a much different spot. I don't want to guess how long it'd take to drive between it, but there was a bit of legwork involved to get to a different spot. So I almost feel like, you know, some work just happened, then someone saw it and has linked it with the event when in. They're not necessarily linked, I would say.
Okay. But something, I mean, trees don't break apart in that height. Something must have happened at that place. But we don't know what crashed into those trees.
Exactly. And we don't have anyone from that, you know, that live right by that forest where that happened saying, oh yeah, a UFO went and crashed into there. It's only the person from a couple of towns over saying it and saying, well, this must be that then. And it's like, well, it could be, but maybe, you know.
You start to stretch it, but gents, we'll have to wrap up because that's us going just over the time. But listen, I'll put the link for the podcast. Any Swedish listeners out there looking for a Swedish language based podcast, there are not many of them out there, and I would suggest you check out UFO Beyond Reasonable Doubt. Or Thomas, if you want to give us that one more time in Swedish,
UFO bottom rimligt tvivel, or maybe we should get Dan to practice his Swedish since his last name.
I'll practice for when you guys come back on next. I don't want to butcher it.
Dan Zetterström.
Thank you for teaching me how to say my surname properly. It's very appreciated.
But listen, let's keep in touch as well, gents, and let's get something set up for you to come on and discuss some Swedish cases as well. That would be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, perfect.
We'll do that.
Speaking with you boys.
Great speaking with you. Have a good day. Yeah.
Cheers.
Bye. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thatufopodcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little grass. Meditative game of fate full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. Jumped back and nearly kissed myself, and I climbed out the window after the elf, and I woke up in my bed, and there was something on my head, and everything was weird, and everything was red, and I called out to my boys, they thought this was noise, they thought it was a dream, they thought it was my toys, they thought it was my problems, and they think I should seek therapy, and I don't know what it is, because it doesn't really scare me. Tic-tac and not quite a saucer.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.